The author of the Fitting It All In blog, Claire Brady, is a fourth-year med student, yoga instructor, certified holistic health coach, advocate for those suffering with eating disorders, and she's our guest today. Welcome to the 270th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm accepted!" And not only accepted, but accepted to the best program for you. This episode is sponsored by Accepted's next live webinar, 12 Tips for Multiple Mini Interview Success, which will take place on Wednesday, August 8th. Accepted consultant Alicia McNeese-Namankar, who does awesome interview prep, will give you equally awesome tips for your MMIs. The webinar is free, but you do need to register. Do so today at accepted.com/MMI. Our guest today, M4 Claire Brady, is a very busy fourth-year medical student at St. Louis University. She's a non-traditional med student, having earned her BA in marketing and design from Notre Dame in 2010. However, after working in marketing, she decided to make a big switch and 2013 joined the post-bac program at UVA. Claire started her full-time medical studies at the St. Louis University School of Medicine in 2015. In addition, she blogs frequently, teaches yoga, became, at some point along the way, a certified holistic health coach, and advocates for those struggling with eating disorders, which she herself recovered from. Claire, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what you like to do for fun, that kind of stuff, the non-professional stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, which is where I am now. I have two brothers, one older, one younger, so I'm a middle child. And growing up, one of the biggest things I did was Irish dance and music. We have a big Irish heritage in my family, so that was a big part of my life all through grade school and high school. And I went to one of the private all-girls high schools here and was a very type A studious kid. And then went on to Notre Dame, which is where my dad went. So I was following the family tradition and I loved it. But I was very unsure about what I wanted to do. One liked everything, which has always been my issue. My blog is fitting it all in. I just like everything. And wound up with majors in marketing and design. So after school, I had a job in marketing and then in advertising, and I worked the whole time. I also have always, I guess sort of since the end of college, been into sort of fitness and wellness. So like you mentioned, I'm a yoga teacher. I love all forms of exercise and healthy eating and stuff like that. So I love doing that stuff with friends when I have free time. And I do keep myself pretty busy between the yoga teaching and blogging and school and stuff like that. But like to travel, like a lot of other stuff as well.
How did you go from an undergrad degree in marketing and design in 2010, when you graduated undergrad, to starting a post-bac program in 2013? What was that journey like?
Yes, the million-dollar question. So I started to get interested in health during about my senior year of college. Like you had mentioned, I was recovering from an eating disorder. That started when I was about 17 and extended through the middle of college. And a big part of my recovery was sort of learning about my body and what this eating disorder was doing to my body and all of the different physiology. And I found it fascinating. I was also getting interested in proper nutrition and just sort of everything related to the body and health. But at the time I was a senior, I was finishing my marketing degree already and I had taken a job. So it was kind of too late to make any sort of career change at that point. So when I started working full time in business, I wanted something that could further my interest in that area. So that's when I enrolled in the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, which was it still is a sort of 1 year online program that teaches you all about different aspects of holistic health and nutrition. And it does set you up to be a holistic health coach, which many of people use as a job after that. I didn't really intend to do that. I just wanted the education. And afterwards, sort of through my blog, I did get a lot of requests for health coaching from people that were also struggling with eating disorders or disordered eating. So I started taking a few clients here and there after work, and I really, really loved these sort of pseudo doctor-patient relationships, but would get frustrated by my limitations as a health coach. These people often needed to go to their doctors. They had questions I couldn't answer, things I wasn't comfortable talking about without more education. And so at the same time, I was getting a little frustrated with my marketing and advertising jobs. I wasn't feeling stimulated or passionate, and I didn't really see myself getting there in the future in that field. And so I got to a point where I was either going to change jobs or change careers.
Right.
And there was a lot of thinking, and I don't want to make this sound easy, because it was months and months of discussion and tears and looking into a lot of different fields.
What were some of the other fields that you considered?
Yeah, so I was looking at a lot of different things in the health field. So I thought about nutrition, because I was really interested in that. I thought about clinical psychology, because I've always been interested in psychology. That was sort of what interested me about marketing in the first place, was consumer behavior and psychology.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about nursing and nurse practitioner type work, PA. And I talked to so many different people, like family, friends and such. I would just email asking about their jobs and how they got there. And I was looking at education requirements for all these different things. And medicine, I actually didn't even know I could do at the beginning, because I hadn't taken a science class since high school. So it was actually my mom's college roommate that told her about post-bac pre-med programs, because her own daughter had done one. Mm-hmm. And when my mom told me about those, I was like, oh, okay. You know, both my parents are doctors. I've always respected them. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I've always respected them for that. And finally, my mom said, you know, Claire, I know you, obviously, probably better than anyone. And just based on who you are and your personality, I think that going to med school is probably the best fit for you. So I quit my job and applied to postdoc programs. And here we are, many years later.
Wow. Okay. That's quite a story. Did you ever, well, you obviously considered several different options. Did you work in a hospital? Did you become an EMT? Did you do all the typical pre-med stuff?
No, which actually, now through my blog, I get questions from people all the time about, like, in college, how much shadowing do I need to do? You know, all this stuff. And I'm like, I didn't do anything. So part of the post-bac program at UVA, and part of what I liked about it, is that they set you up with a lot of that stuff. It's actually, at least when I was there, was part of the requirement. So you take all of the pre-med requirement classes, but we also are required to volunteer at the hospital, and they set us up with tons of different shadowing opportunities. But that was just the 1 year. So it's not like I had a med school application that was full of like hundreds and hundreds of hours and years of stuff. So it's definitely a non-traditional type of application, and you show your interest, I guess, in other ways besides accumulating tons of hours of that stuff. But I will say that having my parents both be doctors, I did, I could, you know, go to work or shadow them a couple days here and there. And I was a little familiar with sort of the field and what to expect just from growing up in that household and hearing all about it.
Right. And you did have your, you know, the holistic health part, you know, that whole side of it.
Right. Which is not very scientific. Which is what I wanted more of, was the science that I felt like I didn't get in that program, but it definitely introduced me to a lot of different health concepts for sure.
And also working one-on-one with people, I think would be another part of it.
Yeah.
Do you think your struggles with an eating disorder as a teen influenced your choice of career?
Absolutely. Like I said, that recovering from that eating disorder is a lot of what even got me interested in human physiology in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has shaped a lot of what I'm interested in. You know, one of my career choices or specialty choices, which I haven't officially decided yet, is psychiatry. I think the mind is fascinating. I think when things go awry in the mind, it's fascinating, and it's such an underserved area. Eating disorders are talked a lot about more now than they were when I was struggling, you know, almost 15 years ago. And I think we've done a really good job with talking more about mental health, but there's a long way to go. And so, yeah, for sure, my eating disorder, as much as I would never wish it on anyone, has definitely become a little bit of a blessing in that it led me to this career that I'm really passionate about.
I remember as a child growing up, there was actually a friend of the family, not a particularly close friend, but I think she probably had what today would be called an eating disorder. Very thin woman, but you know, some, she couldn't hold food down again. The term eating disorder didn't exist to my knowledge in the '60s. I certainly wasn't aware of it. And
it wasn't a thing. Yeah.
It wasn't a thing. I think Karen Carpenter kind of brought it to the fore. I do remember it being discussed when I was in college. You know, there was some awareness of it. And again, I think, you know, the tragedy with her probably is what brought it to the real public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've
attention.
Heard that before, that Karen Carpenter was a big,
right. Okay. Now, you went to UVA and you did your post-bac at UVA. Why did you choose UVA? I mean, there are lots of post-bac programs. And what did you like best about your post-bac experience?
UVA was maybe the first time in my life that I've done something based on what felt right and not what sort of was the best, most prestigious. As being a very type A sort of anxiety prone, uptight girl, I was very tempted to go to the best name I could possibly get into. And I was actually deciding between Johns Hopkins and UVA. Uh-huh. And so when you're thinking about med school and you have the name Hopkins, you're like, oh my goodness.
I actually just interviewed a couple of weeks ago. I think we just posted. I'll try and find the head of the post-bac programs for Johns Hopkins.
So I'm not sure if it's the same person, but the person I interviewed with there, I loved. She was wonderful. So I don't know if it's the same person because it's 20
years ago. I think it was Dr. Tan. I should remember. Not even that long ago.
Maybe, right? Yeah. She was absolutely wonderful.
She's very impressive. Woman. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was probably the one thing that I was having trouble saying no to because she was so wonderful. I have to remember, though, that it wasn't Hopkins Med. It was Hopkins undergrad, which is not quite the same for medicine. Still a wonderful school. But for me, when I visited UVA, it just felt better to me. It felt like a better fit. The staff
and gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous campus. Yeah. And area. Charlottesville is beautiful.
Yeah.
But students I talked to said everyone was really collaborative, that the teachers are super supportive, that they loved being there and loved the area. And I didn't get quite that same feel at Hopkins. I can't say that that's not true because who knows what was going on the specific day I interviewed. Mm-hmm. But I really knew that to do well in a challenging year, being back in school after a while, I needed to be somewhere that I felt really comfortable and supported. And I actually ended up talking to faculty at St. Louis University that one of my parents knew and asked them, like, if you were looking at an applicant from a post-bac program, you know, does school matter? Where should they go? And her response was, what matters is that you do well in your classes, you get some experience, and, you know, you can succeed on the MCAT. So I knew that which school I went to didn't matter. It was just where I felt like I could be the most comfortable. And it turned out to be a great fit. I would say the thing I love the most, aside from being in Charlottesville, which is an amazing place, is how collaborative all the classmates were. We all studied together. We helped each other. They were like the most brilliant people. The faculty were really there for us and advocating for us and wanting us to succeed. So it was definitely the right environment for me.
Great. Now, you're just started, I believe, your fourth year of med school at St. Louis University. What do you like best about St. Louis University, about your med school?
I love that I'm home,
okay.
Which is another thing that I chose. I lived away from home for about 5 years. So I knew that, again, during med school, same sort of decision. If I was going to be going through a really tough time, I wanted to be in an environment where I felt comfortable and supported. So that was a big decision.
Mm-hmm.
I also really loved, and another reason I chose SLU is that everyone I talked to and all friends I had from St. Louis that had graduated from SLU Med talked about how much they liked it and how happy they were. You don't get that when you talk to a lot of med students. So that was a big deal. And I've definitely felt that way, that the people, they intentionally choose a class of people that are going to be down to earth and fun and a good mix of, you know, super studious and smart, but also want to do fun things. And I think one of my favorite things is how accessible the dean staff is. They are mm-hmm. so willing to chat with us, talk about any ideas we want to implement, anything we're frustrated about. They don't sort of sit in a high castle. A lot of their doors are open and they're always willing to meet with us and chat, which is a really great thing when you are paying a lot of money for an education to feel like people are actually receptive to your ideas and how you feel about it.
That's very true. Yeah. You're the customer there. So
exactly.
Right. Now you've completed about 1 year of rotations. What rotation are you on now?
I am on my psychiatry sub-internship right now.
All right. So that's your area of interest. What surprised you about mm-hmm. rotations last year?
You know, every rotation is so different. I think one of the things that surprised me the most is how invested I got in a lot of patients, even in fields I wasn't really interested in. And even when I was exhausted and frustrated by it and sick of it and just wanted to go home, I would always be thinking about it overnight and anxious when I got back in the morning to see how they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that still goes now. When I got there Monday morning, I was like, oh man, that patient left. I wonder how he is. So, you know, as much as it's easy to complain about long hours, you really do start to love what you do and really care about the patients. And I don't know that I expected that to happen so often.
Well, that's great. I mean, people want doctors who care.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't hear that though. You only hear the complaining, at least from the med school side.
That's true. That's true. Was there ever a time so far, at least, you know, whether in the post-bac program or in the, in, you know, the classroom portion of your education or in the rotations, where you thought, you know, I really think I've made a mistake. Medical school isn't right for me. I think I should go down a different path.
So the short answer to that is no. I still maintain that this, for me, long-term, I love this. It has so many opportunities. Being a physician, you can, you know, there's lots of traditional ways to practice medicine, but me being interested in writing and wellness and yoga, I think there's a lot of different directions I can take my career. Mm-hmm. That does not mean that I've never had days where I thought, oh man, it would be nice to not be doing this.
Right.
It is challenging and stressful, and I've had moments where I wondered if I was cut out for it.
Mm-hmm. Can you give an example?
Oh yeah, like taking the medical boards are, I think, the worst thing in the world. I've taken now step one and step two, and there's nothing more, I mean, at least for me, because I'm not like a stellar, just automatically do super well on every test type person. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you take a practice test that doesn't go so well and you just feel awful. And like, man, you know, you get in your head and it doesn't really make logical sense, but you think everyone else must be doing well and I just can't do this. And there's a lot of imposter syndrome in med school and thinking that you aren't actually cut out for it, which is silly because everyone I know in med school is wonderful and brilliant. But that can be challenging. And then there's also just times as an older student that it can get really hard. You know, I'm 30. I have a lot of friends that are sort of moving up in their careers, going on trips, buying houses, have a lot of flexible income, you know, weekends off, which I don't often have. And so sometimes when I have to miss out on things or there's something I want to do that I can't, I definitely think, man, you know, that job in business I had with the income was kind of nice. But I always snap out of it and I'm thrilled with what I'm doing.
That's great. Our youngest daughter is a child life specialist. And mm-hmm. she also volunteers a lot with children suffering from serious and sometimes terminal illnesses. And a couple of times it's happened that a child that she got close to passed away.
Oh, and that's so hard.
Yeah. And the first time that happened, I was really, and that was before she became a child life specialist. I was mm-hmm. really concerned because this was a child who had been doing well and she really watched this child decline. And I'm talking mm-hmm. about like a 9 or 10 year old little girl. Uh-huh. And, you know, she watched the child decline. And then we were actually, I live in Los Angeles and we were in New Jersey for my son's engagement party when she got the call mm-hmm. the little girl had passed away. So mm-hmm. she stayed for the party and immediately flew home for the funeral. And it was really, really hard for her. It was very hard. And,
sure.
And I was kind of holding my breath, wondering, is she going to want to continue down the path that she had chosen? And I actually spoke to a third party who also was wondering the same thing. And mm-hmm. we were talking one day, and she said, no, she actually talked to her about it. And she said she knew that she had brought this child some joy and that mm-hmm. that was the satisfaction and that made it worthwhile for her. So, she did not have any second thoughts about the choice. But
that's so great to hear.
Yeah.
I'm sure she was like some of the little bits of joy in that child's, you know, last little bits of life, which is an amazing gift.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. I think she's still in touch with the parents. I know she was for a while after
that.
Yeah. But, you know, those experiences are hard. And doctors obviously mm-hmm. have them too. And I'm sure that there are patients that doctors get closer to. And obviously, again, as a patient, you want your doctor to care about the outcome.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Absolutely. There are definitely tough moments.
Yes. In addition to sometimes the aggravation of not being able to do what you want to do or just having had really, really long hours. Now, you've spoken very positively about your experience at both UVA and at St. Louis, but let's stick to St. Louis for now. What could be improved there?
You know, we actually are making a lot of changes right now in the curriculum. I think one thing that a lot of med schools struggle with right now is finding a way to give better teaching experiences in the clinical years. There's lots of challenges to that. One being we get bigger and bigger med school classes and we don't get bigger and bigger hospitals. So teams tend to be overloaded with just the amount to do. You know, residents are so busy, attendings are so busy that adding teaching to the list of their to-do list is hard. Sometimes it's a lot quicker for them to just do it on their own. And scheduling is just difficult. So I think that every med school is always working on that and trying to do better about that through reviewing classes and you know, making little changes here and there and see if there's
interesting you should say that, because from the outside, it seems to me like most of the changes in medical education have come during the didactic portion of the medical.
Oh, there's tons of changes there, yeah. Too. Yes. I mean, we're sort of across the board making some curricular changes, improving things. Some of the online resources that most med students use, if your med students listening to it, they would know about sort of like Sketchy Micro and Pathoma, starting to incorporate those into our curriculum to better prepare us. So lots of changes going on. I'm only thinking about clinical years because that's what I'm closest to right now.
Right. You're in it. But it's actually a fascinating point because, you know, the schools talk much more about the changes going on in the didactic portions or how they're bringing the clinical portion into the didactic portion. But you don't, from the outside, you don't hear people talking that much more about how the medical school classes are growing, but the hospitals aren't. And what about the teaching quality in the clinical years? So I think it's a fascinating point.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern. I would say from a personal standpoint, one thing that I wish had, and I'm not trying to talk bad about my school at all, I wish we had more nutrition and integrative medicine curriculum. I'm working on it. I'm trying to work to bring it to the school so that our future physicians can learn more about nutrition and exercise and sort of non-pharmacological treatments that are there. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of med schools are working on that because we've seen that it's a really big need. So I'm hoping that in the future, SLU will have more of that.
Well, that actually leads to my next question, which is that as you mentioned, you are a yoga instructor, you're a certified holistic health coach, you obviously have learned a lot about nutrition just from the call, and you write about exercise, healthy eating, nutrition. How do you intend to integrate these elements or alternative medicine to the extent that you think it's appropriate into your practice?
Mm-hmm. So great question. I'm not entirely sure because I don't know exactly what my practice will look like,
right.
But I do intend on practicing integrative medicine, whether that be that I end up at a residency program that has an integrative medicine curriculum, or there is a one-year fellowship that you can do after any residency in integrative medicine. I think there's a couple of different fellowships in integrative medicine, and they specialize and prepare you to use complementary treatment when appropriate, along with sort of conventional Western medicine. And I think to me, that is proper care. I know that it's not practical in all situations. You know, for example, in acute inpatient medicine, telling someone to long-term change their diet isn't really going to do anything about their acute medical issue.
Right.
But in an outpatient portion and to actually have people achieve optimal health and preventative health, I think it's incredibly important. And I've seen, you know, the power that nutrition and eating and mindfulness and complementary methods have had on my own life and on friends' lives. And I definitely want to incorporate that, whether it's continuing to teach or offering yoga classes for my patients or just making sure I ask them about nutrition and offer suggestions and ways that maybe changing up a little bit about their diet would help them feel better. I definitely see that being part of my practice along with the wonders of Western medicine.
But so far, it's not something that you're getting in medical school. It's going to be basically bringing into practice the things that you've done before medical school. Am I correct? Am I understanding you correctly?
Correct. Although fourth year, we have a lot more flexibility with our schedule and mm-hmm. we can do rotations at other different schools. And so I have chosen to do integrative medicine rotations away. So I just mm-hmm. did a one-week program in Southern California, and
oh,
I've
really?
Been accepted into it's called the LEAPS program. There's a post about it on my blog. It was 1 week and mostly faculty were UCSD. Uh-huh. And then I was just accepted to the Arizona Institute for Integrative Medicine month-long rotation for this November.
Very nice.
So yeah, fourth year, you get to sort of tailor
sure.
your education a little bit more. And so I'm having to obviously take an active role in doing that. People that aren't seeking it out won't learn much of that, which is, I don't think, great. Like I said, I wish that more people were learning about that, but I will have a little bit of education, but we'll probably have to get a little bit more in residency. And then I think a lot will just be making sure that I stay educated myself and finding little certifications or other things here and there. But even more so, just knowing what's out there and having a network of other providers that I can refer to when appropriate. You know, I won't do it all. There's always going to be a registered dietitian that knows more, and acupuncture, and all kinds of other people that can do great work. And you just have to know when it's appropriate and what the research says about referring to them.
You may consider that fellowship that you mentioned, right? So there's a
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right.
Getting back to how busy you are, in addition to being an M4, a yoga instructor, and doing on, you know, having a very active blog, you have a beauty counter business also.
Yeah.
How do you fit it all in, since that's the title?
That's a good question. Some days I don't. A lot of days I don't, actually. And I am a workaholic that's trying to recover from that a little bit and give myself a little bit more downtime.
What does downtime look like for you?
Reading or actually watching a movie without doing work at the same time.
Okay. I thought it might be going for a run or, you know, something like that. But
you know, I'm good about that. I always make sure that I get an exercise every day. But usually if I'm home, I'm always working on something. And part of that is because I am a busybody and I enjoy, you know, I've always been that way. I remember asking my mom a question for something when I was younger. I said, I have to answer this question that says what I do in my free time. And my mom said, what free time? So I've always been involved in a million things. And, you know, the blog used to be much more active. It's taken a backseat. And especially, you know, during big exams or busy rotations, it's just can't be my priority. And that's fine. Beauty counter is a newer thing. And again, I think the key for everything that I do is that I'm my own boss. And so if I don't have the time, it doesn't happen. And that's okay. I didn't teach any yoga during third year because my schedule was reliant on the hospital. And so I couldn't commit to any classes. And I'm just now picking a few up here and there now that I have a little bit more freedom in my schedule. Mm-hmm. My beauty counter business, I actually just hired an assistant to do some of the back end work and help me with stuff that I can't get to. So I feel kind of nuts a lot of times, and there's days when I think I should just quit it all. It's too much. But I think that I'm still figuring out how I want it to all work into my career, and some of it might go away, some of it might expand and take on new directions. And it's definitely, I get frustrated sometimes because I think, man, if I had all the time in the world, I could actually make my blog like a full-fledged business. And it's just not my priority right now. School is my priority. So when I tell people ask me all the time, like, how do I make some extra money? How do you work while you're in med school? And what I tell them is you have to find a job where you're your own boss. I wouldn't have been able to do it if somebody told me 3 times a week, you have to be here at these hours. The only thing that works is that I can squeeze a little in here and there when I have the time.
Makes sense to me. How do you see? Now, I know you're not sure which rotation or which specialty you want to go into, but do you have any idea how your career is going to evolve after medical school? I mean, you mentioned that you're now on a psychiatry rotation. I know that's one of your interests. What do you see?
It is. Psychiatry. Oh, I wish I knew. So psychiatry is a major interest. Sort of integrative primary care is another major interest, which involves a lot of psychiatry. And I'm currently in the next few months teasing out which of those and how that fits together. There's a couple combined programs I'm pretty interested in. You know, I think the only real thing on my radar right now is residency. And after that, you know, depending on what I go into, I could see myself joining an existing sort of integrative practice, potentially opening my own private practice and continuing to write, but from a more specialized medical standpoint, also teaching yoga classes, working with patients in a, I don't know, I like have these big dreams of working in a integrative practice where students or where patients actually have time spent with them and access to nutrition help and all of the healthy lifestyle resources. And there's tons of barriers to that in this dream that I hope I can somehow find a good fit for me that encompasses a little bit of that.
Sounds good. What would you have liked me to ask you?
So I think when it comes to med school, one of the bigger challenges for sure that a lot of people don't think about or don't know about is just how much you're giving up a lot of your freedom and your flexibility. And maybe that's on my mind because MATCH is coming up. And I'm 30. I'm a little bit older. Most of my classmates are sort of 26-ish or turning 26. but it's, you know, you have a life too outside of medicine.
Right.
You have the same sort of, you know, 20s meeting people, thinking about getting married. Some people are having kids, and it's a lot to deal with a medical career that could send you anywhere, and you don't have a choice, and to be in debt and to put that on your family. There's a lot of sort of anxiety and guilt around that. And so, I don't know, I think that people don't talk about that enough, that you see medicine and you think, man, that's so great. That's so cool that you're doing that. It's wonderful. But there's a lot of stress and anxiety that goes into it, and a lot of sacrifice. And especially as an older student, that tends to be one of the more difficult parts of doing it. But regardless, everyone does this because they're so passionate about it, and you can't really imagine yourself doing anything else. And it's so rewarding to know that you have that knowledge to help patients. So it ends up being worth it eventually.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Claire. You asked and answered your own question there, so...
You're right, I did. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. Just fine. Even if you told me the question and I would have asked it, you still would have answered it, so that was fine.
Okay.
I think we're just about finished. I want to thank you so much for sharing your story and your insights, your perspective, and being so generous with your time. Again, it's quite clear you're very busy. Where can listeners find you online to learn more about you, or to explore the healthy products at your beauty counter, or can just to read your blog?
So my blog page tends to be a good link to everything that I have. So the blog is called Fitting It All In, and it's www.fitting-it-all-in.com.
Okay. Well, we're going to link to that from exhibit.com/270 and to some other relevant resources. Listener, thank you too for joining Claire Brady and me for Admission Straight Talk's 270th episode. I want to just give a final reminder and ask a favor. First, a reminder, don't miss the live webinar, 12 Tips for Multiple Mini Interview Success, which takes place on Wednesday, August 8th. It's free, but you do need to register, which you can do now at exhibit.com/MMI. We'll also link to the registration page from the show notes at exhibit.com/270. And now the favor. If you find the show worthwhile, please leave a review on iTunes for Admission Straight Talk. We have links to iTunes in the show notes at exhibit.com/270. It really helps us out, helps us spread the word about Admission Straight Talk if you do leave a review. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.